So our group, we had a very large group. We had over 20 people to talk about biosecurity, emergency response, and disease management. So Eduardo recorded things on slides, and then Victoria took it and reorganized it. And now I have to try and remember and think through what the two of them were putting together. So what we were tasked with was to try and propose any necessary measures to reduce the risk of EMS spreading, propose guidance on response actions in the event of new detections in an EMS-affected area, and suggest measures to manage the impact in EMS endemic areas. And so we had to deal with first whether we even assumed that this was infectious or not, and that dominated some of the discussion because really so many of the things come back to control measures are much more aggressive, and especially across different regions who think that they have different levels of this disease or have freedom from this particular pathogen, if it's a pathogen. And yet we would be imposing systemic changes to a lot of movements of live animals, and that could cause a lot of financial hardships. So to impose those kind of financial hardships, you really need the evidence to support whether it's infectious or not. So it seemed like we were almost putting the cart before the horse in trying to identify some control measures that that would be in place for infectious disease. I know that we have to make decisions based on current knowledge and not wait until we have final knowledge, because the other aspect to this is that by the time you have good evidence to support that it's infectious, if you wait that long, it might take months to years, and if we're dealing with that, it may be then too late to actually impose good control measures on infectious disease, and so then you're going to try and backtrack. So a lot of this comes down to whether we can do anything in the face of not knowing about infectious, because either way, it's going to impose financial hardship to impose restrictions on live animal movements, or the other way around, to not do it, we may be kicking ourselves later. So we had to assume some of the facts that this is either a primary agent with a trigger, and either one could be biotic or not, so that that some component of the cause is an infectious agent. This is a lot of print, but these are measures to reduce the risk of EMS spreading, and really we focused on whether the source could have been the PL. So if it's from the hatchery, broodstock, or PL being introduced into the ponds, to do that, we would have to look at control of transboundary movement of live shrimp, particularly from affected areas to not affected areas. And so in the end, I think our group was saying that areas that truly believe themselves to be free of HPNS would probably want to take the precautionary approach of not importing live animals from areas that are known to have it affected, but that in endemic areas, the areas that are known, then then those kind of live animal restrictions were probably too financially restrictive. So that means we need zoning of affected countries, and then restriction of movement from affected areas to not affected areas would be prevented. You'd probably create buffer zones that could be monitored in between those two areas, and we need tracking of live animals moved from affected areas within the last time frame of whatever we think. So the group was saying 1 to 2 months because of the time period that after stocking that they'd want to follow, and then followed by surveillance. There's concern that the importation of shrimp for reprocessing from affected areas into free areas might also cause problems. So you're dealing with surviving ponds that are at sites that are positive, but are those ponds actually survive through to harvest weight? Then where do those shrimp go for processing? And there's a real concern that if that was infectious and those then are carrier animals, which is a possibility, that they shouldn't be transported to free areas for processing. All of those things are going to take a lot of coordination between countries, and probably in the end the financial restrictions may be just too great to do that until we have proof that it's infectious or not. treatment of outbreak ponds before the release of water. So if this is infectious, then we also have to be thinking about what we do with ponds after an outbreak is identified in that pond, and not release the water or the dead shrimp that are disintegrating in that water. Adequate biosecurity at harvest, so that's the harvest of the surviving shrimp ponds, and effluent control. I think that was already addressed in the previous point. And in all of this, I think it's been brought up a few times before now in the other groups that we need capacity building for the national reference labs to be able to diagnose this, so that that even in areas that believe themselves to be free can investigate and look for it to see that it truly is not being found. Let's see if we can. So we didn't have a chance to really look at whether this is not coming from PL, but when we did briefly discuss it, a lot of these things were applying even for an infectious disease if it wasn't just in the PL, but through some other measure. So we addressed measures to reduce the risk of EMS back to our old one, HPNS. We need information to make these decisions, and that by itself is very dependent on the research gaps that the other group was addressing. So we didn't want to go into those specifically, but we thought that we should bring up these particular research concerns that need to be addressed before we can start pushing any kind of control measure on these farms that are affected. So transmission trials at the pond level and whether the ponds are transmitting to other ponds would be a big factor about trying to impose restrictions even within sites and between sites. Study of a pond possible trigger factors and whether there's some interaction between an infectious agent and another trigger that's happening that's non-infectious. We have to have information about broodstock and PLs and the possibility of carriers and the possibility that wild aquatic animals or other plants are involved. All those things would be necessary before we could start trying to impose any kind of control measures. Risk factors like soil versus lined ponds, because our group brought up the fact that there seemed to be some suspicion, at least, that lined ponds were better than non-lined ponds, and yet we can't really be going out there saying that you should be pushing lined ponds in areas that are endemic, because we don't have enough information to say that that's actually an appropriate measure. But with some epidemiology studies and other research gaps that were being addressed, at least try and put some probability measures to which ones were being at least observed to have a higher risk of coming down with HPNS. And then the last issue around research was the economic impact of disease. I don't know if that's been mentioned before, but if we're going to try and get buy-in from a lot of the practitioners and farmers themselves, they need to be agreeing that the economic impact of doing this measure was going to save them money compared to not doing the measure. And without that kind of economic analysis, then we really couldn't be getting them to be agreeing to any kind of program like this. So along with that was the awareness program that other groups have mentioned. We need to be sharing of reliable research studies undertaken by institutes and private companies, because we think there is information out there within companies that they've already tried a few things, said it doesn't work, and moved on. We need to at least synthesize that to say that there was enough evidence or that it should be redone to say that certain control measures that at least we have anecdotes about could be supported as trying to put them either into further studies, observational studies, or actually applying them in a clinical trial mode. Because the other thing that was identified in our group is that there's a huge amount of money. One person estimated, I think, maybe even up to $2 billion lost over multiple countries. And yet, to try and put together finances to fund a lot of this, it's still going to be a struggle, and yet there's so much money lost. We need to be sharing the burden of addressing these in truly rigorous ways to identify the best control measures. For instance, the spread of concern on probiotic use, quality and quantity, could force a lot of farmers just from those kind of anecdotes to start switching over to antibiotic use. And really, we have no evidence that supports either way, especially that we don't even know it's infectious. So we have to be careful, too, that we don't propose or get too far along the line of people adopting a lot of measures that really had very little evidence to support their use. And then back to the economic, that we need to make sure that everybody who's buying into control programs knows the economic impact. So along those lines, I think another group mentioned something like this. We call it an international task force, perhaps led by FAO or regionally NACA has programs that can fit into it that could look at information across this disease, across countries. We brought up the fact that confidentiality for release of information from companies is going to have to be addressed in all of these things because there's a concern that as soon as you start putting too many restrictions and control measures or gathering of information, that companies will just not report. So we need a way to be able to deal with their information confidentially so we can incorporate it into overall management assessments. And we need to include local producers because they're the source of the primary data. That was what we got to. We did go around in a big circle, I think, to try and address some of these, but basically came down to the fact that systemic changes on movement restrictions will be a financial hardship if we do them and it's not infectious, but it'll be a bigger hardship if we don't do them and it is infectious. So we need that addressed. And that funding of a lot of this investigation, whether it's field-based research, lab studies, diagnostic confirmation, and then assessment of control measures, really needs to be at some public level because if you rely on individual companies to be able to do this, but the benefit is to the entire industry, then that can really slow us down in being able to move forward.